There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby. That's right. This man knows what's up.
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile Halloween Edition. I was going to say the very spooky phone number. But the phone number, 343, it's very spooky, 0106. Also for a text, the same spooky, 343-0106. Obviously, the text line is melting down already today. Thank you, Jeff. But we'll get your text and we'll get your calls as well this hour. And a reminder, too, with the FM Talk 106.5 app, it gives you the option of another way, an additional way to get in touch. If you have the app downloaded on your phone, it's free, and it's just called FM Talk 106.5 on the App Store or at Google Play. You see the logo. That's us. Download it. It's free and all kind of stuff. Streaming the station. Collates all our social media feeds for breaking news on there. In addition, traffic maps, information for show schedules, and you can get our podcast the first place they post it, so the app. But in addition, right there at the bottom of the page, you'll see a microphone icon. If you use a technical term, if y'all will mash that, it lets you record a message and emails it to the show, and we can play it back here on the air. So ways to get in touch. And as I said at the end of Jeff's show, this hour, and good to see this man in studio. It's been too long. Mobile County District Attorney Keith Blackwood joining me on this Halloween edition. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
There's any costume contest there at your office, or what's happening?
It would be bad costume
to go into the courtroom.
Yeah, no costumes at the office. We have a lot of serious things going on this week, and so we're keeping it professional. Good. But I did tell the staff if somebody wanted to make an off-site event, then yes, they were more than welcome to dress up there.
Okay, yeah, just I wouldn't picture, you know, some of your assistants or something walking in there dressed. It's like, hey, I'm dressed as a crazy surgeon. Or
right,
something like that.
Right. Yeah, not a good look for us.
There is a lot of serious stuff going on. I want to kind of start off with this news today coming out of y'all's office, and this specifically about Judge Zogby granting y'all's motion to hold Charity Matthews with no bond under Anaya's Law. And we talked a lot about Anaya's Law when it was going through the legislative process.
Right.
It passes. It becomes law. But I want to find out from you. You're saying because of this, your office using, how do y'all use it? Like, give me, this is a story. Tell me how y'all use it and why and when.
Well, Anaya's Law was a very important development that our legislature gave us. And if I remember, it was unanimous in the legislature. The governor signed it. It was overwhelmingly approved as a constitutional amendment by the citizens of the state of Alabama. So I think everyone thought that this was something that was important. And the law allows us to hold certain violent offenders without bond in circumstances where we could not otherwise do so. So we've been able to successfully use that. Like you said, our latest one was this morning, the Charity Matthews case. She's charged with murder and I think a couple of attempted murders and some other charges for three separate shootings that took place. She had no history, and so nothing that we could use to hold her without bond. You know, for example, already being on bond or being on probation. And so we felt that this was a case where she was a danger to the community, a danger to others. And without Anaya's Law, we would not have been able to hold her under the Alabama Constitution without bond.
It gives, if I remember this correctly, it doesn't force or compel. It gives the judge the option.
That's correct.
Right? You asked for the district attorney's office. You asked for it. It does give the option of the judge saying, y'all have asked for it. Yes, in this case, I believe it's merited.
That's right. And the approach that I've taken is that we sit down and look at all the facts of a particular case. If there's somebody that's violent that we can have held under some other law without bond, the examples I used before, they're already on bond or on probation for an offense and they commit a new offense, we're going to go that route because it's a much easier standard for us to prove. if we don't have those circumstances existing and we feel that someone is a danger to the community because of these violent crimes, we're going to pursue it under Anaya's Law. It's a much higher burden. It's a much more involved process, but it's absolutely worth it. And the approach that I've taken is that, first of all, it's a new law. I wanted our judges to know that when we say that someone is violent and a danger to the community, they can trust that. And yeah, I didn't want to just seek it in every single case where it was possible to seek it, because then there's no trust from the bench. They're, you know, that would just be us, you know, putting the call on them.
Yeah, they're like, oh, here they go again.
And as district attorney, I wanted to make that call, and I wanted to, the bench to be comfortable that when I say it, I mean it.
So you can hold, it's not like every time you're running with the knives, all you hold that close, don't use that a lot.
I do.
It tells us something when you ask for it.
Then. Right, and I would say that we've used it a very good amount. We've had, under my administration, I think 12 different hearings. They've all been granted. That's 12 violent offenders that are in Metro Jail right now instead of out on bond as they would have been before Anaya's Law. And we started with murder cases. If we didn't have a reason to hold somebody, we've moved into some other violent crimes, and we're seeing a tremendous amount of success with it.
Yeah, if y'all remember, of course, name for what happened to Anaya Blanchard, but before this passed, we had cases here in Mobile specifically. And people shot, and you're like, that person was just, you know, it was always something I said, when you see the memo would come out, or you'd see the news graphic, and the picture of the suspect they were looking for was their mugshot from a month before.
Right.
And it was a tell. I'm not, you know, I don't have a law degree, but I'm enough that I can look at it and go, that's a tell.
Right. And that causes us a tremendous amount of frustration. I know it causes the community a tremendous amount of frustration.
Yes.
And the fact is, people are getting hurt. People are getting killed by these people that should have been held in jail. We're able to do that now. I think our community is safer for it. I think that's been seen in some of the shooting crimes that are down. And law enforcement continues to do a great job, and together, you know, we're going to continue to reduce this violent crime rate.
Yeah, because they depend on you. With my friends in law enforcement, we'll say, not a specific case, but, you know, we arrest this person.
That's right.
We process this person, and we know they're going to go right back out, and they say, I know what he's going to go do.
Well, once the arrest is made, without prosecution, without the tools that prosecutors need, then that's exactly right. They're just going to get back out.
They get this feeling that I'm like, dude, I did my part, but I know this guy's going to be right back out. We're going to be dealing with him again in a week or two.
And I think we're seeing a lot less of that, especially when it comes to the violent crimes, because we do now have the tools to hold these people in jail awaiting trial. A big part of that is getting through the backlog of cases that we had when I took office. I know there's a lot of frustration about murders taking 5-6 years to get to trial, other violent crimes taking so much time. We have tremendously reduced that backlog to make justice swift again. Judges are more comfortable holding people in jail because the time period is much shorter, and we continue to see good results in that direction.
Is there the nuance of this, speaking with your predecessor in this gig, that when time's expanded for when they may go to trial, you have it has a magnifying effect, because if you're going to try to get somebody to plead or pled or whatever the new way to say it, if they're getting them to plea on this, they don't do it if they think they can ride this for another year or two.
Right. That's part of it. Part of it is the ability of a defendant to delay the trial 6 months or a year. The other part is that time only makes a case worse. Once a case has been indicted,
witnesses and stuff like that,
witnesses fall off, evidence, you know, in a terrible circumstance might get lost. But really the problem is witnesses. Is the witness still alive? Do they still live here? If they don't, we've got to find them now. Might be in California, might be in Alaska. We don't know, but we have to find them. We have to get them back here. So the quicker that we can get these cases to trial, the better it's going to be for the prosecution of these cases.
And in addition, that the threat of that happening, right, that is happening, somebody who might decide they're going to plead would plead, which moves the calendar along.
It does. And, you know, I think it's important for people out in the community to see that, because you know, you might have a person out there that's thinking about committing some kind of crime. But if they've got a buddy that just got arrested and soon after convicted, that person is much less likely to go out there and offend.
So I do wonder about that on deterrence side of this, because I've looked at this in discussions about the death penalty. And, you know, some people support it for because it's the right thing to do. And then some say it's the right thing to do, but it's also a deterrent. And I might get to that later. But you feel this is a deterrent, like this gets out through the criminal community and they go, OK, I'm going to choose not to do that.
I think so. The death penalty is a little bit different analysis. But when it comes to prosecuting crime in general, I think the faster that we can prosecute crime, within reason, we've got to take the time to get the evidence together, to have all the forensics done. You know, all of that does take time. I'm working on ways to try to shorten the length of that time. But when a case is ready, the sooner that it gets to trial, the better. I think that's a message to people in the community that might be thinking about criminal activity. You know, if they see somebody that 6 or 8 months later, they're in prison mm-hmm. instead of 5 or 6 years down the road and their case is still pending, I think that's a huge deterrent to people to not commit crime.
Yeah, because there's two parts of this. I guess maybe there might be more, but you've got the person you're prosecuting, but the secondary effect, and I don't know how you can ever, I believe it exists. I don't know how you could ever. It's going to be an immeasurable, right? You could say, here's crime on this day, and here we go 6 months later, and it's down. We don't know for sure, but that does seem to, there's something going on.
I mean, I think what you look for is trends over a lot of time, 5 or 10 years. You know, what is the trend doing? How has the prosecution changed? Has it taken longer? Is it a shorter amount of time? And, you know, correlation doesn't equal causation, but I think that the swift prosecution of criminals is a huge part of reducing the overall crime rate in the community.
All right. We're coming back. More of our conversation. Your texts welcome as well at 343-0106, 343-0106. I see some specific questions here. We'll try to get those, and you can keep those coming. So if you had that question, the district attorney, here's your chance to get it answered. Also, a reminder, too, I want to give you a heads up that we are, well, less than a week away from Election Day. You know that. Our coverage begins at 7 o'clock on Tuesday night. We will be on Facebook Live from 7 to 8. Then at 8 o'clock, it'll be Facebook Live and live on FM Talk 106.5. So it'll be Jeff Poore, myself, Dan Dalton, and a series of people we're going to put on the show for their analysis as well. That's coming up on Tuesday night right here on FM Talk 106.5, and we'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1221 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all here. Halloween edition. None of us are in costume right now. Sitting in here, the district attorney is dressed like the district attorney. So here, there you go. That's what you're dressed as. I decided because I'm running my son around for trick-or-treating, I'm dressed as a chauffeur today.
There you go.
So
well,
my chauffeur look.
Well, these days I live in a suit, so yeah. that's pretty common for me.
Guy in a suit is his costume. He's also our district attorney, Keith Blackwood. This question here on the text line, this story, you know, made news. We were talking about it in our news cycle this week. The way he asks is, says, how dumb does someone have to be to threaten the life of the DA from jail?
All right. Well, you know, I would think the same thing. And I have to be careful how I talk about this because there is a federal prosecution going on. But I did receive a letter and there was enough detail in it and claims about this individual having people on the outside and following me, following my family with enough detail that I took it seriously. You know, I've gotten threats before over the course of my career. But this one was kind of a new level. And so, you know, there were about 3 different federal agencies and several local agencies that were very concerned, and they initiated some investigation. And it was a period of about 2 weeks in my family's life where, you know, we had security 24/7 because they were just taking it that seriously.
Sure.
But there's nothing like going to church with a guy in full SWAT gear, you know, accompanying you the
whole time.
Makes
a scene.
Right. But thankfully, you know, the investigation was complete and it ended up how it has with a prosecution of this individual. And I'll just leave it at there since the case is pending and it's not my case.
This texture says, you mentioned looking at speeding up forensic analysis. What ideas do you have specifically?
Well, it comes down to one word that fixes a lot of problems, funding. And I'm working with some current lawmakers, some former lawmakers. We're having conversations right now. I had one this week with one that would be well known to everyone in your audience, but I'll keep his name to myself for now. But, you know, really it is, it's reducing the time that an individual test takes to do. And the way you do that is you have more analysts to do more tests. Because, you know, when it comes to DNA analysis, there's a process, and it ties up a machine for a certain amount of time with a person, several machines with a person at any given time. If you have more of that equipment, you have more personnel, you can do more tests. I think that in a place like Mobile, where we have, you know, such a caseload that comes in, I think, you know, that should be a pretty easy ask of our legislature to give some additional resources to the Department of Forensic Sciences so that we can speed up those tests, because that translates directly into speedier prosecutions.
That's why it's good to get folks on the show firsthand, because there'll be something out, go, well, it's slowed down in, you know, analysis, and we the people don't know exactly. If you could put it that way, say, okay, it takes, you know, an hour, 3 hours, whatever it is, so this many people to do it, it makes it more understandable for us. Instead of being this amorphous thing out here for forensic analysis, say, okay, Sean and Keith each run the machine, they got to run it for 3 hours to do this. I mean, that helps us understand.
Right. And
why.
And you think about it in terms of, you know, ballistics analysis. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a scientist in front of a very powerful microscope doing some, you know, very intense analysis, you know, at a microscopic level. You know, that's a big piece of equipment. That's an analyst. You know, what if that analyst wants to take a vacation?
Right.
So we've got to have more. We've got to have more equipment. That's really the only way to make these analyses go faster, so that the prosecutions can be faster.
So you add more people, add more equipment. I'll screw this up, have some professor yelling at me, logarithmically increase the ability to turn this information around.
Right. I mean, and again, that translates to safety to the community, because we've got faster prosecutions.
There we go. Incrementally, that's the word, before I have some professor yell at me. I've talked about it this week, and reminder, y'all, you can see the post at Men Unite Against Violence on our Facebook page, or FM Talk 106.5's Facebook page, our Facebook page. The sign we put up at Spring Hill and Moffitt there with the name of children, babies murdered in our city. Some of those babies' names were people that were in homes, children doing kid stuff, laying on a couch. I mean, doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Right.
And we're sitting here in a culture where I guess the tough guys now, instead of squaring down with each other, just shoot into a house without any idea who's in there shooting into.
Yeah, this is, you know, one of the most horrific developments that we've seen in violent crime is shooting into a residence. Many times they'll have a specific target. I think that happens in a lot of cases. But, you know, you can't see inside the residence.
How do you see your target inside a house?
Exactly. You can't. And so it ends up being an indiscriminate shooting. And we've seen children fall victim to this. I've seen these from time to time over the years as a prosecutor, almost 17 years now. But it does seem that in the last few years there has been an increase. I think that is directly related to the gang activity and how that's evolved and developed in Mobile, and the things that, you know, the ways that they act, the manner in which they carry out their business of the gang. It involves a lot of sort of retribution. It involves, you know, trying to get the other gang back for something that the one gang did. And it seems like that in a lot of cases they're, you know, choosing to solve these problems with firearms, and in you know, the midst of that you have children that are getting killed.
Yeah.
That's totally unacceptable. We've seen an overall reduction in the number of those shooting into cases, but one is too many.
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely is, especially when a child dies. That is too many. So, you know, we're going to prosecute these to the fullest extent of the law.
What if the law changes and goes to making it a A-class felony? How does that help y'all?
I think that would be a big help, because you don't know if you're going to kill somebody or not when you're shooting into a house. So you're running that risk every single time. Right now, it's a Class B felony with a gun enhancement. That's 10 to 20 years. If it's made a Class A felony, that takes it with a gun enhancement to a minimum of 20 years and up to life in prison. And I think that that would be a huge deterrent for people shooting into houses. You know, I briefly looked at your billboard and I saw a name on there, and I don't want to highlight which one because the case is still pending. But there's a name of a 9-year-old girl on there that lost her life because of one of these horrific shootings. And we've indicted several people for capital murder.
I saw that, yeah.
In that particular case. We take this very seriously, and it's a very important issue for the safety of our community.
Yeah, it's, you know, the shooting into for houses and for cars. We, of course, talked about the story of a 9-year-old that was shot in a vehicle who it was his second shooting. He had been shot at 9 years old, had already been shot before, not that day, like in the past. It was just... It's unacceptable. All right, absolutely. Coming right back. And your questions on the text line for the district attorney at 343-0106.
Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. This segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. That's my buddy Trey with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Been doing it 16 years in Mobile and Baldwin County, so you can take my word for it. I've used them personally, use them with this radio station. Several of us have here. But even better, go to the Google reviews. Just do your own search. Go to Google and look for 1-800-GOT-JUNK, Mobile, Alabama, even though it's also Baldwin County. And look at the Google reviews from people that are your friends, family, people you go to church with, that you know that use 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and see what they have to say. And I would say the enhancement on that is, who goes online? How satisfied do you have to be to go online to say, this was really good, this service was really great? Now, online's full of people going, I didn't like the ice was too cold in my sweet tea, or what? Yeah, there's a lot of that. But how many people go out and say, this service was so good, I recommend it to other people? Well, there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of those talking about Trey and 1-800-GOT-JUNK out there. Look for yourself, see what I'm talking about, and make that appointment. Holidays coming up, want to get everything squared away in the house, got family coming in, whatever it is. Get the junk on, storage units at your office, even big things around your house, the number of above-ground pools and trampolines and swing sets and storage buildings that they get rid of weekly, it surprised you. They can handle the big jobs as well as the small jobs in the house. You got junk, you want it gone, it's 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Make that appointment online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, or pick up the phone. The name is the number, 1-800-GOT-JUNK. All right, continue our conversation with District Attorney Blackwood. I want to get a couple things in here. I'll get back to the text first. I want to ask this question, because you and I were at an event in Sims, just about 2 weeks.
Right, about 2 weeks ago.
Two weeks ago. And you were there with a panel and discussing fentanyl. And this wasn't just some academic discussion of fentanyl. We were talking to a group of people in that community that had seen multiple deaths of children in that community from overdose.
Right. And
it's not a theoretical, this might happen. These were people that have seen this.
No. And, you know, there is not enough hyperbole in the universe to describe how bad fentanyl is and how it is an absolute game changer when it comes to the world of illicit drugs. It used to be, you know, years ago that young people could experiment with drugs, and, you know, that may have been expected, even though we've had the war on drugs for my entire lifetime. Yeah. But they could live to tell about it, in most cases, for another day. And fentanyl has completely turned that on its head. Our communities are being flooded with it. Most of it's coming from out of the country. It's smuggled in. It is so cheap and easy to transport that it is the drug of choice for drug traffickers right now. They can cut it into any existing drug. They can mix it with inert material and press it into pills that look like legitimate pharmaceuticals. It certainly affects the addict community, but it also affects everyone, because, you know, we all have children or grandchildren in school, in college, working jobs that might want to get an academic edge and study, and they're not an addict, but they take a pill from a friend that they think is an Adderall or something similar. And it's not. It looks like an Adderall. exactly like one that would be prescribed, and it is fentanyl, and one pill can kill. It is that easy, or it's that instant that it causes a death. So we did talk to some people that have lost friends. I think there was one guy that had lost, what was it, about six friends.
Y'all, I mean, to see this, he's a kid.
Right.
And it was just so sad.
I talked to somebody just this morning that was telling me that she had eight of her friends from university that were all in a sorority together, eight friends, the people that she had in her phone have died from fentanyl that they didn't know was fentanyl because of just taking one pill.
And, you know, there's that nuance to it, and I've discussed it with other people on the show, and it's, but your dad, you can understand this. I've got two teenagers, one old, you know, a lot older in college, but talking to her, it was like, no means no, don't do anything. Okay. But, you know, I'm sitting here with the law, but I mean, statute of limitations have ran. I wasn't supposed to drink beer until I was 21.
Sure.
Guess what I did? I drank it before I was 21.
Sure.
But drinking that beer didn't kill me.
Exactly.
Drank too many Meister Brows one time and felt like I was going to die.
I had a headache.
But I looked at my daughter and I said, honey, I know you're going to do teenage stuff, but this one thing, promise me you won't take any pill from anybody. You know, that it's like, and I'm not giving you okay on the other stuff, but
right.
It's a different, it's now, this is a class A felony for me if you take any pill, because it's going to kill you.
It is.
It's so weird to not just be able to say nothing, because I know kids will be kids, but it's this thing, it's deadly.
It is absolutely deadly, and it's, the pill is important, and it's important that we teach our kids, our young people, and really adults too, you know, do not put any pill in your mouth that was not prescribed by a pharmacist or prescribed by a doctor and he purchased it from the pharmacy. And parents have to tell their kids, you cannot take anything unless, you know, it came from the doctor through the pharmacy and I give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is that deadly. You know, not only that, for the illicit drug world, it's being laced into cocaine because they can stretch the product. It's being laced into marijuana because they can stretch the product. It's laced into everything. You know, 4 kilos of fentanyl is enough to kill 2 million people.
That was the thing, right? Because it's so dense that I remember early on being told like a sugar packet worth of it, it's enough for like 500
people. Deadly doses. That's right.
A sugar packet.
Yeah. And you take that a kilo of fentanyl, it would be equal to about 168 kilos of cocaine. And just from a smuggling perspective.
Oh, yeah. I would rather smuggle the smaller thing.
That's a huge truck. Yeah. Or it's a ton of mules in a caravan that mm-hmm. are bringing it across our border and our country. You shrink that down to a backpack, it's that much easier. That's why it's flooding the market and being cut into all these other drugs to stretch them out.
Oh, it's economics, and right? I mean, it really is economics.
It absolutely is. And yeah, I'm in the midst right now of proposing a plan to some of our government officials to really target the traffickers, and we're going to go after them. We have seen a 600% increase in fentanyl trafficking over the last 3 years alone.
600%.
And it is something, you know, we're dealing with the violent crime. I think law enforcement, my office has done a great job with that. But we have got to target these fentanyl traffickers, and we've got to put them in prison for the rest of their life and make it very uncomfortable in this economic market to traffic fentanyl in Mobile County.
You know, you said something the other night that I thought was interesting. I was ignorant of it, that when these people cut it into other products, then it counts as fentanyl.
If the person has
X number amount of cocaine. And they cut the fentanyl. Maybe they used, I don't know how you measure it, it's how many flakes of fentanyl, whatever in it. But now all that cocaine is fentanyl.
It's a fentanyl mixture. And
so you can charge it as it was.
That's correct. And that brings the amounts, the grams of it, down to where some better mandatory minimums apply and we can get stiffer sentences.
Because in the past, they could have just had a sugar packet. And if you compared that with the amount like a cocaine, that wouldn't have been as big a deal.
Well, in the past, no. We now have a law for pure fentanyl as well that has some even bigger mandatory minimums. That's a little bit harder because of the way that forensically drugs are tested right now. So I plan to work with the legislature to kind of tweak this new law to really apply the mixture of fentanyl to these higher mandatory minimums so that it's treated differently from the rest of the opioids, which is usually what we're using now for the mixture. It's so different from the rest of the opioids that I think we need a standalone fentanyl mixture with smaller amounts for higher minimums in prison.
Right. I wonder if you could, I think, you know, I talked about it a little bit, like reverse engineer it. It's what eventually happened with spice, right? Because there'd be this spice out and they'd say, okay, that's against the law. And then they'd tweak the recipe and then like, right. Then they'd stay selling it again. And I guess in a ham-fisted way, what the legislation passed is the net effect of that stuff was what was against law. And then you could back that.
Right. And it takes time for our laws to catch up with what's going on the ground. I think it's always been that way. It's probably good that our system works that way so that we're not entirely reactionary. But I think most legislators are open to tougher laws on something especially as dangerous as fentanyl. Like I cannot stress enough how dangerous and deadly this stuff is.
Yeah, and you've said it, most people said it, but let me go through a little list, a checklist here. You've been 17 years doing this. Okay,
sure.
So let me roll some stuff out.
Almost.
Yeah, almost 17 years. So drug-wise, so here's fentanyl. How much worse than cocaine is it?
I mean, it's hundreds of times worse than
how much cocaine. Worse than methamphetamines is it?
I would say hundreds of times worse. I mean, it is so much.
Worse than methamphetamine.
Right.
Y'all take it that is. In for a second.
It is more powerful than morphine. It's more powerful than heroin. It is exponentially more powerful than morphine and heroin. The only setting that is a legitimate use of fentanyl is in a hospital setting.
It's end of life.
When
stuff, right?
End of life or, you know, deep pain that doctors are treating. It is used legitimately in hospitals. That's the only setting where this should even exist. But it was being made in China, smuggled in through Mexico. The cartels in Mexico are now making it in their big factories. It's getting smuggled across the border in backpacks, and it's flooding our communities, and is a huge problem.
You know, one of the weird things, and as this started unfolding and talking to law enforcement folks about, because I had the, I guess somebody said, well, you just act like some dad reaction. That's me. That I thought, well, it's going to be bad for their business. The drug dealers are killing their customers, so people will stop coming. And then I found out it was actually the inverse, that their business would pick up if some of their people had died.
Right. And
when
it comes, you know, to the community of addicts, and I want to preface this by saying, you know, being addicted is not a crime.
That's right.
And that is a public health problem that we have to deal with, and we're doing that in our criminal justice system with
drug
pure addicts
too,
with
yeah.
drug court
yeah.
and all of that. But the people that are pure addicts and they're just looking for the next best thing, if they hear that some particular dealer's product killed someone, they know that that's a more effective opioid. And so that is advertising for them to go get that product. And it is wild, but it's true, and it's what we're seeing every day.
And so, once again, so something like methamphetamines, this is hundreds of times worse.
Absolutely, it is. You know, methamphetamine will certainly kill you over time. Mm-hmm. You know, fentanyl in a dose of 2 milligrams is enough to kill someone. That is a deadly dose. I mean, you were talking about a pinch of fentanyl that someone is exposed to and they're dead.
You know, somebody asked this question the other day, and I don't know how you do this in respect of civil liberties, but this idea of not having it manslaughter, that I know y'all have charged for manslaughter, but having it a murder charge if somebody sells fentanyl.
Right, and that comes down to the intent portion of it. If someone were to use fentanyl in a way to intentionally kill someone, just like poison.
Yeah, you mentioned that. So the scenario is you're like, I'm going to kill Sullivan,
right.
And I'm going to do this, I'm poisoning.
Yeah, I intend to kill, and so I utilize fentanyl to carry that out. That's murder. This manslaughter law is where there's a distribution of fentanyl to a person that, you know, is willingly taking it.
Right.
You know, the legislature has decided that is absolutely reckless, just like manslaughter. It's a reckless act, not intentional. And so that's why it falls into the manslaughter category.
Okay.
But there could be a set of circumstances where we charge a murder if it is an intentional killing and they carry it out that way.
So it's how it was done, what was the intent?
And the intent, which we talk a lot about in my line of business.
All right, coming right back. More Midday Mobile. Your questions at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Halloween. Glad to have you along. You know, I'm thinking about, I'm going to be probably driving, which I don't know how I got roped into this again, driving my youngest child around to do trick-or-treating. Nobody chauffeured me when I was a kid, but listen, I'll quit being cranky and just say this. I may actually take my bicycle from Adventure Earth Bicycles. You know, I've been riding over 2.5 years on my e-bike from Adventure Earth Bicycles, mostly ride it off-road, but it's a cool bike. And if Daddy gets tired, I'd run it all electric tonight. Listen, the stock is up at Adventure Earth Bicycles for non-e-bikes, 400 in stock at any time, and now over 75 e-bikes in stock for you to come take a test ride on. And that's important, too, because different e-bikes, you may be a person just stays on road with them, might need a hybrid, might need an off-road. And with hunting season here, he's got, my man Clint, got the Denago hunting e-bikes in this week with the 4-inch fat tires and the 750-watt motors. Those are in. Check out the new shipment of Ladies Comfort and cruiser bikes, all assorted colors. They're here, and also they're accepting Christmas layaways on all bikes and e-bikes. Full set of the helmets, too. Helmets for dad, helmets for the kids. Like, my son has one with like a rubber mohawk on it. Listen, they've got the helmets, they got the bikes, and it's your local bike shop. They do all the service work as well. He's my friend, Clint Jameson, Adventure Earth Bicycles at Airport and Little Flower in Midtown, kind of catty cornered across from Bruce Chris. Online at adventure-earth.com. Adventure Earth Bicycles, everything inside to get you outside. Yeah, I might do some. I might do my chauffeur work from the bicycle as well. All right, continue our conversation with Mobile County District Attorney Keith Blackwood. I've got this one here. This question's from me, not from the text line. So I talked about this with my buddy John Sharp from AL.com last week, and y'all, the story is up online, plus I put it up on Twitter. He was looking through some of our laws here in the state.
Sure.
Laws, right?
We have
things,
a lot
that,
of them.
Things that have been passed here,
right,
in our great state. And he points out that there's a law in the books that's been on the books for 59 years. Okay, 59. Y'all should know this. And it says that if people go out tonight in costume and you are dressed like a priest, nun, rabbi, or minister, or any member of clergy in Alabama, you could get a $500 fine and even jail time. So I want to ask, is your office ready to prosecute the number of people that will be dressed up in some kind of clerical garb?
Well, I'll tell you this. In my almost 17 years, I've never had the opportunity to prosecute this particular crime. There could be some free speech issues there, so I don't want to leave my appellate entities out there hanging on that. But as you said before, I am a dad, and some dads like to give advice, right?
Yes.
So here's my advice as a dad. When it comes to the creator of the universe, I would just be very respectful.
There you go. But if you have the you could say, no, this is not a clerical vestment. It's a whatever. I'm dressed as, it's like a tux, but I removed parts of it or something. I don't know. It's just interesting to see this. Y'all read on over at Twitter. I put the story up from John. What is illegal in our state? And there you go. You heard it from district attorney too. Just use some judgment here before you dress up tonight. On the drug thing, James says, Sean, the truth is Americans have a drug problem and have had one for decades, along with failed drug courts and the war on drugs. Show me where the war on drugs won. Personal accountability is lost and gone forever. But I do see this as different. I don't know how much, what it would look like if there wasn't the war on drugs. There's no way to prove the negative.
Right.
But this is a different thing, man.
This is absolutely different. I would put this more into the category, the way we're seeing it with fentanyl, it's more in the category of, you know, foreign adversaries that are attacking our population. That's the way I see it. It would be no different than, releasing a virus into the country that killed a lot of people. But I think that the seed was planted to create an addiction problem. And I think, foreign adversaries probably picked up on that and have flooded our country with this stuff, and it's killing people. It is a huge issue.
And looking at this, we hear about China, and I've talked in the past. It's interesting, like the Chinese government, people say, well, they're allowing it, they're making it. I've read they're not making it as much as they're not like the people they know making it. They're letting them make it and get it out of there.
Well, I mean, from my understanding,
didn't see you.
In the beginning of the fentanyl epidemic, most of it was manufactured in China, the illicit fentanyl.
Right.
Most of it was manufactured in China, sent to Mexico, and then smuggled into the United States. The Mexican cartels know how to make it now, and I think that's probably through Chinese investment in Mexico The Mexican government, the government of the United States need to get together, and they need to absolutely destroy these cartels because that is a huge killer of Americans now.
Well, I mean, you think about it. What was like maybe 70,000 was the number I heard that were killed maybe so far this year? And overdoses from fentanyl?
It is quite a lot. I can say that 70% of all opioid deaths at this time are fentanyl-related.
Here in Mobile County?
Here in the United States.
So if it was a military, let's say the military, Mexican military, which they're not, but they were lined up on the border and they were shooting, 70,000 Americans a year, we'd have gone to war.
Absolutely. And, over the last, few hundred years, we've moved from trench warfare to kind of unconventional warfare, unbalanced warfare. And I think that, this releasing of fentanyl into our population, the promotion of it by adversaries is a big part of that unconventional warfare. And I think it's time that we recognize it as such.
I heard a stat. I can't pull out exactly where. So this is just something I heard, y'all. So somebody research. But like the cartels were like $1 billion a year business before fentanyl. And now they were like a $60 billion a year business. It's that much business for them. It was incredible. Yeah. I mean, they were already doing quite well.
Like I said before, in Mobile County alone, trafficking of fentanyl in the last 3 years has gone up 600%. So, the questions that I have to answer is, what can I do here in Mobile County?
Right.
That is working with our local law enforcement, is working with our leaders in government to really target these traffickers and make Mobile County a place where it is very uncomfortable to traffic this deadly drug, because if you do it, you're going to go to prison for the rest of your life.
I hate this question comes up with not a lot of time left, but Laura said, I've heard first responders are in danger of overdose in cases of accidental contact. So I heard that early on. Is that happening?
Absolutely, it's happening. Our first responders, our police, our EMTs, they routinely carry Narcan now, and there have
for
been,
themselves
for themselves. There have been multiple exposures of EMTs and law enforcement that resulted in an overdose situation where their colleagues had to administer Narcan so that they wouldn't die. That happens on a regular basis.
So, at that point, just to try to play logic, could that officer have a manslaughter charge against the person that sold the fentanyl to the person that was overdosing that then got to the officer?
Potentially dependent on the circumstances.
Officers just doing their job. They're exposed to something.
Yeah, that's going to be a fact-specific analysis, but I would argue that a situation like that is very reckless, would fall into the category of manslaughter, and, God forbid, an EMT or an officer die from an exposure, then that's something that we would absolutely want to prosecute.
Because if you put off like a poison bomb or something to get one person, but it happened to be in a park and it killed five other people, you'd be responsible for those five people as well.
Right, and this is no different. In the case of exploding a bomb, I would argue that that's a pretty intentional act where you intend to kill someone. Depending on the circumstances, you could have the same with fentanyl. If somebody intentionally exposed the officers to it, absolutely. But we would take a look at the specific facts, and we would want to prosecute that to the fullest extent of the law.
Thanks for coming in. I appreciate it. You come back and see me soon.
Thanks, Sean. Absolutely.
All right, Mobile County District Attorney Keith Blackwood, our guest. And we're coming right back. More Midday Mobile.